Good evening. It's good to see you and it's good to be with you tonight. If you're visiting with us, we want you to know that we're so thankful and honored that you are here and that you chose to spend this hour with us. If you would, go ahead and fill out one of them blue cards that you see in the pew in front of you. Turn them into one of us. That's just so that we get to know you, you get to know us. We can better equip with one another. And so as tonight, we're going to look at a topic, it's time to rise up. About 3 or 4 days ago, Anna and I were in the truck. Of course, the kids were at their grandparents last week, and so it was just me and her, and we didn't really know what to do. And so one night she said, hey, let's go to Murfreesboro. So we started driving to Murfreesboro. And it's funny because, you know, when you have kids, you have a lot of things to talk about. But it was kind of silent for a way. And we were talking about it. We're like, what do we talk about? You know, we can't talk about the kids. We can't yell at them. There's nothing to say to each other. So about halfway there, I'm in the driver's seat, and my lips are moving a mile a minute, and my hands are going like this, and I can see someone glaring at me. Of course, I know it's Anna, and she's looking at me with this look. And I stopped, and I looked at her. I said, what? She goes, who in the world are you talking to over there? I said, I'm talking to myself. And she said, well, what are you talking about? I said, well, I'm preaching coming up here, and I'm preaching the sermon to myself. I said, I do that. She goes, well, you're really laying it down. And I said, well, I said, I'm preaching to myself. I said, I go over these things in my mind. And here's the way that I write sermons and I write Bible classes. If you've been in my classes or you heard me speak before, you know I do it this way. Is when I pick a topic and I pick the points that I want to cover, I first sit down and I look at the topic that I want to talk about. And I say, what does Jake Ravislute need to hear? What does Jake Ravislute, and I know I'm using third person, but I'm telling you where I go with this. And I sit down and I write that down, and I go, no, I need to get a little bit deeper than that. And I'll come across another point, and I'll say, no, I need to get a little bit deeper than that. And I will go over and over and over and over again, and I want us to see tonight that when I wrote this message, I wrote this because it's something that I need to hear and I'm struggling with. And I want to be open and upfront with you right here off the bat and let you know that this is something that I personally am dealing with. And the things that I say and the things that I cover tonight, I want you to know that I'm saying it to myself first. And I have hopes that when I say these things, it also applies to you as well. I want to ask you a question before we get into this. You don't have to raise your hand. You don't have to nod. You don't have to acknowledge that you're hearing me. I just want you to, in your mind, think of an answer. Is there anything in your life right now that you can think and say, you know what, I can do better at that? You know what? I'm lacking in this regard. I want to step up. I want to rise up. I want to be better. I want to do better. Is there anything in your life right now that you're saying, you know what? That's something that I need to step up on. If you said no, this is the point in the sermon where you get your pillow out and go to sleep, and there's nothing else that we're going to say that can help you. But if you're like me, and I'm confident you are, you said yeah. Yeah, there's something in my life that I'm struggling with that I can rise up and be better at. There's something that I can look at and say, you know what, I need to get to this point. I sat down and I had a discussion. I'm going to get into that here at the end of my message. What made me come up with this sermon? But I sat down and I said, okay, this is what I'm dealing with. What do I need to do to fix it? What do I need to do to get back on track to where I need to look at myself and say, Jake, you need to rise up. How do I rise up? First off, tonight I want to notice that we have to be committed in whatever it is that we're looking to rise up at. Let me give you this scenario for a moment. This is going to be hypothetical. Let's say April 28th, I got married. Me and Anna got married. We stood before a church. The preacher was standing up there, which was her dad. We said those vows. I, Jacob, commit to you, Anna. For better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, for sickness and health. I don't remember them all, but you know where I'm going with this. I commit that you are my number one. I commit my life to you. Faithful to you. I commit to you. Anna looked at me and she said, I commit to you. I am committing to you, Jake, that for richer, for poorer, for sickness and health, for all those things, I'm committing to you. That was a commitment that I made and we made together. Now, let me just give you this example for a moment. Hypothetically, let's say the first year of our marriage, I went above and beyond. I mean, I got up early and made sure she had coffee. I made sure that the house was clean. I made sure dinner was ready. I was going above and beyond. I was doing everything that I can to make sure that she was the happiest woman on this earth. Then let's say a year or two went by. Sunday morning comes around. I don't say good morning to her. I don't say a word to her. Maybe after breakfast, I sit down for an hour and I listen to what she has to say. And then maybe throughout the rest of the day, I don't have time to deal with it. I don't have time to talk to her, so I don't talk to her. Sunday night, maybe just for an hour, maybe I can find the time just to sit and listen just for an hour. Maybe there's enough time there. I don't know. Monday, I don't say nothing to her. I wake up, I don't say good morning, I don't text her, I don't say how's your day going, I don't check in, I don't say a thing to her. Tuesday, same thing. Wednesday, same thing. Except Wednesday night, I decide, you know what, I can try to maybe, if I have time, maybe, I'll give her an hour, maybe. Thursday, nothing. Friday, nothing. Saturday, nothing. How many of you in this room think that I would have made it past Sunday? No, you know my wife. I'd be on 2020 or something if that ever happened. You see, we look at that situation and we look at that scenario, and anyone in here who's married, and if you're not married, don't do that. But even the young ones that are not married can look at that situation and say, well, ain't no one's going to deal with that. There's no lady or wife. There's no one that's going to deal with that. That's unacceptable. That's absurd. And sometimes I'm talking to Jake. If this applies to you, right on. Sometimes I treat my Christianity that way. If I have time. Sometimes I look at the week and I look at my schedule and I think to myself, what am I committed to first and foremost? Where do I put my priorities at? You see, too many times I personally have looked at the day and I've looked at things and I've said to myself, and I'm ashamed of this, but I'm being truthful with you right now. I've looked and I said, I can't go tonight. I got too much going on. You know what I was doing? God should have been number one in my life in that moment. But I allowed something other, secular, I have allowed something else to become my number one. It wasn't intentional. It wasn't on purpose. It's not like I sat there and said, well, you know what? It is what it is. No, I purposely or unintentionally, whichever way you want to look at this, I have allowed my commitment to go somewhere else. I've allowed something else to become my number one. I want us to think about something for a moment. Think about this again. Personally answer this in your mind. When situations, activities, events come into play, into my life, into my week, where do I prioritize my worship? Where do I prioritize my relationship with God over these secular activities? Now, understand me when I say this. I'm talking to myself here because I don't need to do those things. I don't need to be in that situation, but I've allowed myself to do it. I have allowed myself time and time again to say, hey, you know what? Be all right. I thought ahead. It's okay. It's all right. You know what happens to me? I start prioritizing God as not number one. And before I know it, it's becoming easier and easier and easier and easier for me. That's Jake. Maybe that don't apply to you. For me personally, that's something that I struggled with. And I look and I say, I have a commitment that I made. When I became a Christian and I was baptized into Christ, I made a commitment that, Lord, you are number one in my life. You are number one in all things. As for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord number one first. But guess what? As life happened, as situations happened, that verse, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord first, became unintentionally second, third, or fourth. I want you to notice this verse with me. This is Isaiah chapter 40, verse 28 through 31. He says, do you not know and have you not heard this? That the Lord your God is an everlasting God, the creator of all the earth. He never becomes faint and weary. There is no limit to his understanding. He gives strength to the faint, and he strengthens the powerless. Youth may become faint and weary, and young men may stumble and fall, but those who trust in the Lord will renew their strength, and they will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not become weary. They will walk and they will not faint. Let me tell you something that I have dealt with. I get into a zone of something. I'm just going to give you an example for me personally. On a Wednesday, I will get in the zone about something, and I feel as though I can't step away from that. Of course, I can step away, but I feel as though I can't. And you know what happens really fast to me, to Jake, is I start becoming faint and I start becoming weary. And here's what I mean by that, is I start rationalizing why it's okay that I don't do what I'm supposed to do with my commitment to God. I start rationalizing ways that I can get out of what I know I'm supposed to do. And in turn, I become faint and I become weary. And then guess what happens? I come to services, and I didn't ask permission to use your name, Miss Faye, but I'm going to. You got to forgive me. But I walk in, and she's standing there ready to give me a hug. I haven't come to a service in months where Miss Faye Burton hasn't given me a hug or I haven't hugged her. And there's many others in here who has hugged me, but she seeks me out. It's like I have a radar on where she says, I need to encourage someone, and it's always me. And the soaring with wings like eagle, and walking and running, and feeling that encouragement and feeling that upliftment comes back to me. And I think to myself, this is why the commitment needs to be number one. Notice this verse with me. He says, commit your ways to the Lord. Trust also in Him, and He will bring it to pass. Do your best. 2 Timothy chapter 2:15, he says, do your best to present yourselves one that is approved unto God, a workman that needs no need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. Ask you a question. Again, think about this mentally in your mind. How easy is it to do this verse if God is not number one in my life? If I start to drift in one direction and God is now not my number one, now maybe something else secular is number one in my life and God comes second, third, or fourth, how easy is it for me to say that I'm approving myself unto God. I'm showing God that I'm a workman that need not to be ashamed. And by doing so, I'm rightly dividing the word of truth. How easy is it for that to happen? It's not. It's not. It's hard. And let me tell you something. When God is not number one in your life, Satan is right here saying, you're doing just fine. You keep doing what you're doing. And it's easy to become a person that is ashamed, who can't stand before God in that way, who says, I'm sorry, my commitment wasn't there. Notice this verse with me. I want to start in verse number one. We read in our scripture reading, but I want us to really comprehend what Paul is saying here. In verse 1, he says, listen, I charge you therefore for God and the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. He says, who's going to judge the quick and the dead at His appearing in His kingdom. Verse 2, he says, preach the word. Be instant. Be ready. In season, out of season. Let me ask you a question. If God's not number one in my life, is it easy for me to be ready in season and out of season? If God's not number one in my life, is it easy for me to look and say that I'm going to preach the word, I'm going to be ready, I'm going to be always on guard, in season, out of season? He goes on to say, reproving, rebuking, and exhorting with all longsuffering and doctrine. Why do I need to know this, Paul? He's telling young Timothy, he says, because the time is going to come when they're not going to endure that sound doctrine. They're not going to care about the truth. He says they're going to turn their ears from the truth and they're going to turn them unto fable. He says, young Timothy, listen to me. You need to watch thou in all things. Endure afflictions. Do the work of an evangelist. That word there is a promoter or a follower of God. Make full proof of your ministry. How easy is it for me in my life to do the things that Paul's telling me to do, to what he's telling young Timothy to do, if God's not number one in my life, if my commitment to God is not where it's supposed to be? Let me tell you something. It's really easy for me personally, and maybe you fall in the same category as me, I don't know. But for me personally, when I allow something secular to come into my life, and God slips out of that number one role, the things that, when Paul says, be watchful in all things, because the things that sound good to my ear are going to start becoming like their truth to people. He says, watch thou in all things, endure affliction, do the work of an evangelist, make full proof of the ministry. Paul says, for I am not ready to be offered, and the time of my departure is at hand. He's telling young Timothy, he says, listen, I'm coming to the end of my life right here, and I'm passing this on to you. He says, I fought the fight. I finished the race. You know, when I was baptized, when I became a Christian, everyone told me, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. It's a long race. And that race had hills, it had ups and downs. There were times in my life where God was number one and God was number two. He said, but listen, I finished the race. And through everything, through it all, he said, I've kept the faith. Verse 8, he says, therefore now there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, a crown of heaven, which the Lord, the righteous judge, is going to give unto me on that day. He says, but listen, not to me only, but to all them who also love my appearing, who love promoting me, who loves my word, who loves the things that I'm trying to give to you and the thing. What he's saying is to all those who I am number one in their life, not only do I need to be committed, but I got to take a stand. If I want to rise up to be the person God called me to be, no matter what that is in my life, no matter what avenue I need to step up in, I need to be committed to it, and I need to take a stand. I want you to notice this verse with me. He says, watch, stand fast in the faith, be brave, and be strong. I was talking to a friend of mine. His name's Ed. I've talked to some of you about Ed. Ed gave his life to Jesus here about a year and a half ago, converted his wife. Ed and I were talking one day, and Ed said, you know, my struggle that I'm dealing with, he said, is that for so many years, God was not number one in my life. He said, I allowed so many other things to become number one. I allowed my kids to think that it was okay for other things to be number one instead of me doing what I know I'm supposed to do. He said, now I have one child who's 15 years old, 14 or 15. He said, I have another child who's 23, and I have another child that's 25. He said, what do I do in this situation? How do I stand up and tell them where my priorities lie now? And he said these words that's been ringing in my ears for a long time. He said, I think it's too late. So Ed went and talked to his children. He sat down with each one of them individually. 25-year-old daughter never had an example of God in her life. Ed looked right at her and said, sweetheart, listen to me. For years, God was not number one, but now he is. And he said, I'm so sorry that I wasn't that example for you. But now, this is where my priorities lie, and I'd love for you to come and study with us. He went to his son next, said the same exact thing. He went to his 14-year-old daughter, 15-year-old, like however Charlie is, but he said the same thing to her. I'm sorry. I've allowed other things to become number one. I've allowed you to believe that other things were number one when really they weren't. But as for me and my house now, we're going to serve the Lord first, and we'd love for you to join with us. Even though you're out of my house, I'd love for you to join with us. I love this verse. Deuteronomy chapter 14, verse 2, he says, you have been chosen and you have been set apart, notice, for his purpose. If God is not number one in my life, or I have allowed other things to become my number one, this is a difficult verse. Likewise with this one, 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 9, he says, but you are a chosen race. You are chosen. I want you to think about this wordage that he uses here. He says, but you are a chosen race. You're a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people, notice, for his own possession, so that you might proclaim the praises of the one who calls you out of darkness and into his marvelous light. Here's something I want you to think about with me for a moment. If you were stuck in a dark tunnel for a long period of time and did not see light, and someone came and rescued you and gave you a flashlight, how long would it take you to stop talking about that person that brought you to the light? Oh, for the rest of your life, you'd be talking about it. For the rest of your life, you'd be like, you won't believe this. I was in a tunnel. I was stuck. There was no light. I didn't know where to go. And then out of nowhere came this light, and it rolled me out. And we talk about it. We brag about it. Because that's something in our lives that we were brought out of darkness and into light. Well, the same thing applies to us. When we became a Christian and we became a child of God, we were in darkness. If you're not in the child of God, if you have not been baptized into Christ, you are currently in darkness. And the way to see that light and to see that promise and to see that commitment that you need to make with God is by obeying his commandments, so you can fully see the light and the joyous occasion when Christ brings you out of that darkness and into that light. That's a feeling that no one can explain. You have to experience it. Notice this verse. This is Ephesians chapter 6. We know this verse. We know this comment. But it says, therefore, take up the whole armor of God. Something I noticed about this is he doesn't say take up half of it. He doesn't say, well, you just need the breastplate for this part. He doesn't say, well, you just need to put the belt on and the shoes. No, he says you need to take up the whole armor of God. We look at this and say, how do I stand? How do I make a stand in my life? How do I stand up for what I need to do? He says, put on the whole armor of God that you might be able to withstand the evil day, the Satan in the evil day. And having done all of these things, to stand. Finally, this evening, I want you to look at this verse with, or this last topic with me. If I want to look at my life, and whatever it was in your life that you say, you know what, I need to rise up and do better at, I need to commit that number one in my life is God. Number two, I need to stand up for it. And number three, humble yourselves. Again, these 3 points come to Jake Ravenswood. If these apply to you, I'm doing something all right. If not, hang on, it might get better. But this is something that I struggle with. I struggle with this. Every single day I try to get better at this, but I struggle with it. Humbling myself, taking the pride away. Notice this verse, Luke chapter 14 and verse number 11. For those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. When pride comes, Proverbs chapter 11, verse 2, when pride comes, then comes disgrace, but with humility comes wisdom. Comes wisdom. Something that I've noticed that I deal with. It's hard for me to admit when I'm wrong. It's hard for me to admit when I haven't been the person that God called me to be, when I've put other things as number one in my life. It's hard for me to admit that. My pride gets hurt. I don't like having to admit that I've fallen short from what God called me to be. But sometimes I need to humble myself. Let that pride go to the side and say, I was wrong. Pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. Proverbs chapter 16 and verse 18. And then we know this verse as well right here. Humble yourselves, therefore, under God's mighty hand, and he will lift you up in due time. Finally, humble yourselves. Humble yourselves before the Lord, and he will lift you up. You may know this picture. You may have seen this picture. If you have, I'm going to tell you the story again. In Africa, American photographer went over there to film and to photograph some things that were happening over there. He was given specific instructions. He said, here's what you're going to do. You're not going to touch anybody. You're not going to help nobody. There's a lot of diseases going around. There's a lot of things happening. He said, so when you get there, you do what you need to do and you get back home. As he was on his way walking to the shelter and to the food bank, he saw this little girl that you see in the photo, hunched over in this position. If it was a better picture, you could tell the ribs, you can see the starvation, the final breaths that were inside this young girl's throat, her body. If you look behind the little girl, maybe 10 to 15 feet back, you see this vulture. I don't know, right there. You can see the vulture standing there waiting. The vulture knew what was fixing to happen. So this photographer had a decision to make. Do I help this little girl and get her to safety? Or do I just take the picture and go back home? So this photographer stood back for a moment, and he takes this shot that you're looking at on the screen and walks away and goes back to New York City. When he gets there, he submits this photo. This became Time's top 100 photos of all time. This is the number one downloaded photo of all time. There is an award that's out there for photographers that is comparable to winning a Nobel Peace Prize or a Medal of Honor or something highly prestigious like that. And this photographer, because of this photo, won that award. 4 months after he won that award, he took his own life. Because the cost is a little bit too much to bear. For me personally, for me personally, the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my life. Was it? Hardest thing I've ever had to do in my life was had to tell my wife and kids, I'm sorry. To say, look, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I allowed other things to become number one. I'm sorry that I let you believe that it's okay to miss services for something else. As a leader, I'm sorry. You know, sometimes we just have to put the pride aside. Take a stand and commit to what we're called to do. I asked Phil to lead this invitation song. This is my favorite invitation song. The words of this song just, I love them. I need thee. Lord, I need thee. Every hour of every day, Lord, I need you. Oh, bless me. Now, my Savior, I come to you. I come to thee. Tonight, we're going to sing an invitation song, a song of encouragement. And if you're here tonight and you're saying, you know what? My commitment has not been number one, God. I want to recommit my life to Jesus. I want to let congregation pray with me. I want encouragement. I want edification. I want my family to know that number one is always in my life. We can make that happen. If you're here and you never committed your life to Jesus, you haven't put on Christ in baptism, right here, right now, you can say, you know what? I'm committing my life to you, Lord. I'm going to obey your commandments. I want to be baptized into water. I want to be rising a new creature. I want to come out of that darkness and I want to come into that light. I want to take a stand right now. I want to humble myself. And I want to commit that first and foremost in my life, above all other things, God, you are number one. I need thee. Oh, I need thee. Every hour I need thee. Oh, bless me now, my Savior. I come to you. Will you come? If we can help you in any way, let it be known right now. Together we stand and while we sing.